Sharon Rudebush. Today's date is June 3rd, 1973. The time is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I will be interviewing Mr. Emil Gonser of Bay City, Michigan. The topics to be discussed are his early training in music, his experiences in the Army Band in World War I, and his experiences playing in orchestras in this area beginning before the war. When did you begin your musical training?
When I was 7 years old. My mother paid me a nickel and a half an hour to practice.
Was that piano you started first?
Yes, on piano. Mm-hmm. And I had three instructors, not very consecutive, but they followed one another, Professor Moore and Miss Ames and Mrs. Hamilton. And they were very, very efficient. And I practiced until I was about 9, 10, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. Did you like to practice?
I liked to practice, yes, I did. That is when I got along a little further advanced. Mm-hmm. And then I got myself a clarinet, mm-hmm. and I kept on playing piano, but I also played clarinet. And I took lessons from Charlie Hardig on Fifth Avenue in the print shop between Washington and Center in Washington and Saginaw on Fifth on the south side of the street in his print shop. He and his brother ran the print shop there.
You took the lessons right
and
in the print
shop? I took the lessons right in the print shop.
Was it kind of noisy?
Well, it was, but it didn't bother me any. So, but anyway, by the time that I got so I could play it, I didn't have much trouble because I already read the music, see.
That's right, from when you played
the piano. Yes, from playing the piano. So I read the music in my, also by accompanying my dad, you know, in his on his violin that he brought from Germany. But I also, and in June 1916, around the 11th, or I think it was, my dad got a telegram from the War Department to mobilize his battalion, you know, and recruit up to war strength. He had four companies then, and that was Wausau, Bay City, Fort Yearn, and Saginaw. Mm-hmm. That was his battalion. And, of course, I had to sign up to our vacation. I was only 16.
16?
Yes, and our vacation had started, see. Mm-hmm. But we slept up there. I signed up too, but I wasn't of age. Mm-hmm. And we slept in the back end of the armory on the floor in the back end and recruited. And they, gee, Christmas, there was three or four nights where we was recruiting, see. Mm-hmm. Then we went down, marched down to the depot, and took the train to Grayling. And then the fun started. What I mean by that is that all the excitement, you know, at Grayling. And when we got there, we had to be examined for medical examination. And I got turned down on account of my eyes. But by playing clarinet, they accepted me, see, in the band. Yes. And they needed musicians then, too, because a lot of them had already got out on account of dependency. Mm-hmm. So then I got in that way, roundabout.
Right.
So and then I became a member of the, it wasn't the 32nd Division then at that time. It was the 33rd Infantry. Mm-hmm. That was 33rd Infantry. Because later on when we went down again, we changed it to the 125th. We were 125th. And so I was stuck there at Grayling until, and each one of the company regiments, there was three regiments there, artillery and all, and they all went down to El Paso, Texas before we even left. We didn't leave there till October 1960, and it snowed. Thank you. Mississippi at Memphis, Tennessee, and through Texarkana, Texas, mm-hmm. and then through El Paso. Yeah, El Paso. And we could see the mountains at night when we went to went to sleep in our bunks, berths as they were, and we could see the mountains from then. And the next morning we were in the Southern Pacific Railroad yards at El Paso.
Did you know where you were going when you set out?
No. The old timers all got released on account of dependents, and for different reasons, see. But mostly, all that was left there was about 20, maybe 25.
Mostly young.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So then we marched over to where we were going to have our camp, at Camp Cotton. That was what the name of it was, Camp Cotton. It was on the drainage canal that connected with the Rio Grande River. See, that was the reason that they had this drainage canal there, was to drain around El Paso. So we put up our own tents, and then later on we built our wooden sidings on it, and we just signed our eight of us to a tent, And then we had our meals. We had our regular three meals a day, and then we were first to, with the band. And while we were there, we also buried some of our officers. They had died, especially with pneumonia. It was pretty tough on them for pneumonia. So then we'd have to parade all the way up to the depot uptown. Shipping back here to Bay City.
Oh, I see.
See, we'd ship them back home. We'd play the dirge, going down the street, slower than the Dickens, slower. You'd never think you'd get there. But anyway, we finally make it. But when we come back home, going back to the camp, Camp Cotton, that's why we took a different tempo going home, going back.
Play too?
Yes, oh, yes. We'd play, we'd march right behind it. The whole regiment would come down and go with us, to bury him, or to ship him, rather. So then we'd, now what do I start?
What else did the band play for kinds of functions besides?
Well, guard mount, reveille, parades, and concerts. That was our initial. That was our main. Yes, that was our main thing. And
what was the reason why the troops were ordered to Texas?
The reason we were sent there was on account of Pancho Villa, and that he had just shot up Columbus, New Mexico, a border down, and then the United States Cavalry took after him and drove him down into Mexico, and. That was our initial excuse why we were there, but it wasn't. It was to get us into Europe. That was what they wanted. So that was the initial reason.
And where General Pershing got his start?
Yes, that's where General Pershing got his start when he came out of there. He made his reputation down there, see, and then he got appointed the commander-in-chief of our forces in Europe. But anyway, we were the last American troops down there, assigned there. When we were coming back from there, and we took a different route to coming back because I guess they were afraid of dynamiting our coaches or something. But anyway, we came back by Mobile, Alabama, New Orleans rather, and Mobile, Alabama, and Birmingham, Alabama, and up through Nashville, Tennessee. Right through Cincinnati, and then back up to Fort Wayne. And then they assigned our different battalions. My dad's battalion was assigned to Fort Wayne, that's Detroit. And another battalion was assigned to Fort Huron. That's the account of the tunnels, you know, under the river. And the other battalion was assigned to the 3rd Battalion, was assigned to Sault Ste. Marie, to protect the locks up there. Protect the locks. And so then they were recruiting, too, all this time they were recruiting. And in the meantime, while they were recruiting, they also started building Camp Custer. And I can remember when I drove my dad over there. He was the commander at Camp Custer, first commander they had there. And he set up his headquarters right in the farmer's yard, an old German couple over there, in their front with a row of pine trees in back. And he set his headquarters up in that yard. And we got the pictures of it. And of course, I went back to Fort Wayne. I was supposed to be back at Fort Wayne. But my dad was in charge of Camp Custer. And the next time I went there was when they were going down to Waco. That's where we left for from there, after that. And it was funny how that turned out that way, you know what I mean? We all had to assemble again. You know, one battalion come in for Detroit, another one come in from Fort Huron, and my dad's battalion at Camp Custer then. Mm-hmm. And we were at Fort Wayne.
How many pieces of band then?
Oh, we had about 40, 50. We had 40 or 50 pieces in the band at that time. Mm-hmm. But we had a big bunch then. We had a good size outfit. And then we headed for Waco, Texas. Mm-hmm. And that was our...
In the meantime...
in. We couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. The other outfits were all home and discharged, and we were still in. Uh-huh. And of course we were hooked. You know what I mean by that? Is that we were in and couldn't get out.
Right.
So we were already in. So then we recruited up and we were going down again to Waco. That's what I was telling you about. And we got down to Waco, and of course a big part of that had been built already. What I mean is that the tents, you know, are where we stayed. Mm-hmm. And that time we had 4 regiments there, not 4, 4 regiments, and I mean war strength regiments. In the same way with the artillery, 4 regiments of artillery. Gee, there was 28,000 men there, 28,000. So that was the nucleus of the whole 32nd Division, 28,000. And all the wagons. Well, when I saw the review, you know, of the 32nd just before going overseas, mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, it looks like miles and miles, in, you know, the length of it.
Right.
The artillery and horses and mules and wagons and everything. Yeah, it was some sight. But and we've had to play it in front of our colonel, mm-hmm. for our regiment. See, each regimental band had to play for their own. So we had to play for our 125th Infantry. We played for the 125th Infantry, see, because we were the 125th Infantry band. But anyway, it was a wonderful sight to see all those men, because that big parade, I'll tell you, 28,000 with all the equipment and everything. But that was our last review. And then in a few days, we got word to embark, you know, for
Hoboken.
For Hoboken, New Jersey, yes. So that's our embarkation point, see. Mm-hmm. That's where we headed for. And I got that far, and I come down with scarlet fever. And I didn't go overseas with my outfit. I was already hooked in a base hospital at Camp Merritt, New Jersey. I was there for 6 weeks. And then I got a 2 weeks extension on my sick leave to come home and see my folks, see. Then I went back to Camp Merritt, New Jersey, and I went over on the Olympic. That was the second largest ship in the Atlantic then. I went over on the Olympic, and some sight to see that ship too, because they fooled and tried. They thought they were fooling the Germans. They said that they took us down to Hoboken. Then they brought us by ferry down to the dock, you know, where the Olympic was tied up. Mm-hmm. See, they threw them off the track, they thought. Anyway, that's where how they worked it. But then we couldn't look out our portholes. We had to keep everything closed. Mm-hmm. And she shoved off, or we didn't know where, but it was Southampton. That's where we landed in England.
And everybody left from Texas to Hoboken at the same time?
Yeah. Oh, no, because we were, I was casual then. We were casuals because...
What about your father?
Well, he was a casual too. Yeah, he was...
Why was that?
Well, they wouldn't allow him to go overseas because he was of German descent. But the Chamber of Commerce in Detroit, they saw to it that he was good enough to go. So they put the pressure on, you betcha, they put the pressure on the War Department in Washington, and he was allowed to go. They replaced his command too. He had all his men with him. And but I was later, see, I was over there. He'd been over there a month or two, you know. Yes. He was over there a month or two when I got there, see. But I went by way of Southampton, then across from Southampton, a packet boat over to Le Havre, France, and then to the English camps. And we were in an English camp, of course. And by that time, they were on their way to, they'd already served what they were there for. See, they were going to use the 32nd Division because there were so many Germans in Wisconsin and Michigan, see. So they weren't going to use them to do the actual fighting. They're going to use them as replacements.
Oh.
See, when there's so many got, well then they'd go on to replace them.
But not as units, they weren't?
No, they weren't as units.
Oh.
But after they got on them, they did.
Yeah.
They had to change their tune. So that's when Dad and the rest of them all were together again, see. And that was announced, and that's where I joined them. Announces Lorraine.
Was anyone else in Bay City in the band? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Overseas.
No,
you were the only one.
I was the only one, yeah. The only one. But anyway, I got back with the band at, up in the Alsace.
What was the function of the band overseas?
Oh, the function then was mostly to play. You know, of course, it was... You were within gunshot too of the Germans. They could shell you. They did too.
Mm-hmm.
Shell you at night, you know, in the daytime. Tell me what's on. No? Well, we could see the sun shining on the windows of this German town, big one, on the Rhine River, but it was way over from us. And, of course, that made us feel pretty good. But then from there, we skipped down and changed, we got transferred from there over to Shadow Theory, because
mm-hmm.
that's where the Germans were attacking. And we traveled there by truck. Everything was by truck then.
Mm-hmm.
There were no railroad trains there. And so we got in the, traveled all night, all most of the day. And then we got on the other side of Shadow Theory, on the east of, or west of Shadow Theory. And we were assigned to different homes and buildings, you know, for barracks. And we were assigned there for, put us up, you know, with the people to put us up. But of course, we ate with our own outfits. But then we got orders to go and get on the east side of Shadow Theory. So we traveled back down the line to Shadow Theory, and that's where we could see where they just shot up the 2nd Division. That was the Marines and the infantry,
right.
Two regiments of infantry, two Marines, and we could see the bodies along the road there then. We could see them, and they had put up quite a fight, but of course they outnumbered the Germans, you see, and that, the Germans had to fall back. And then we marched up through Shadow Theory, down a few miles and then up north, going north toward the salient, you know what I mean, the mouth of this big salient that was there. And that was where my dad got it too, was right up there. And what was the name of that? Oh, the Ark River. That was the Ark River. Yeah, that's where my dad got it. And I felt, because we were right up among our own artillery. We were up pretty close too. And but my dad and the officers had to go up there and look the territory over, because they were going to move at night, see? And they had to know what they were doing. So we got, we stayed behind, you know, but we were close enough that we still were within rifle or artillery range. Mm-hmm. And I know that I got, that was the next morning after we got on that side. And they came in and they told me, this one mounted orderly came back there and he said, did you know your dad got it? And I said, no. I said, I didn't know it. He said, yes. He said, your dad got it. And he said, there were a lot of others got it. The same, it was a German headquarters, had been a German headquarters. And so my dad and some prisoners of war got it. You know, they killed him, see. And my dad, he got it pretty bad, too. There's a lot of, now, Cook Nelson post of Pontiac. That was the Legion post in Pontiac. Mm-hmm. They were officers in that outfit that got killed there. They were the two of the officers, but there was a bunch of them. And I can remember that because I didn't see my dad again for a long time.
How old were you then?
I was 16.
What was the band doing?
We were doing first aid, and we piled our instruments all in under this canvas, and then proceeded up north to where the front line was, and that's where Dad had got it. Dad had got it there. And well, it was kind of a hectic proceeding, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Knowing your dad is in the hospital. And of course there was a bunch of them, it wasn't just him. But anyway, we put our instruments under this canvas and got our litters and proceeded up to where the infantry was, you know, where our companies were in line then. They were put in, you know, they were out, stretched out in line and shooting and all that. So in the meantime, I forgot to tell you that I passed my Uncle Emil in the woods that same night, and he was from the captain of the 126th Infantry, 126th, not 125th, and he was going up too. And the funny part was that when he came back, we had our first aid station there with this across the road from this church. And who should come back there but Uncle Emil? He was all in. He was all exhausted. So I gave him my Red Cross, or not a Red Cross, but it was a stretcher. Yeah, it was a stretcher. Germans had used it for their dead and dying because it was all covered with blood. And so Uncle Emil, I gave it to him, and he slept on that, and I slept on the ground. And but he got up and left in the morning before I even got up. You know, he wasn't awake yet. He went back to his own outfit, see, because they were right in the same line we were. And that was how it come that I saw him, see. Mm-hmm. But Dad, I didn't see Dad. We were, like I said, we were stationed then at this priest's home, you know, at this church. It was a fork in the road is what it was. And got it on? Well, the sky was lit up at night. There was flashes of the guns up and down the line. You could follow the battle lines by the artillery fire. And of course the Germans retaliated with some heavy stuff too, some high explosives. But at least we were at this priest's house there, and they hadn't touched us yet. But we had quite a time to getting any sleep, I'll tell you that, because it was shaking the house. The walls of the church parish house, you know, they were shaking it with the guns on there, both sides of us. But anyway, that toward morning, and then it got daylight, and we were still there. But it wasn't so funny, you know what I mean, when you see around and you see the guys laying here and there, you know, them that had been hit. And no, it wasn't so funny. But that's the way it was. But I finally had to call it a day. What I mean by that is, you know, just pack up. And
where did you go next?
Oh, from there? Oh, we went straight up to the Vale River. That was the head of this apex, or you got a triangle there.
Uh-huh.
And it was as far as our line went. That was as far as the Germans didn't go back any further either. They stopped right there at the Vale River. That's where we were too. When we got up to the Vale River, the Germans weren't going back any further. They stopped right there. So they were giving it to us good, what I mean by that. There's plenty of artillery fire up there. So we were getting it good besides dishing it out. We were receiving too. So we finally came back. George Letts was our supplies officer, and he gave me a horse to take back, or a mule it was. A mule, two mules. They'd been wounded, so he gave them to me, and I took them back and took them to the place where we left. See, we were too close to the line. We were too close to the front. In fact, the shells were coming over there pretty lively.
Mm-hmm.
So we fell back, you know what I mean. Of course, we were Red Cross anyway, medical. And we fell back, and he sent us back. I got a couple of mules to take back. And then we went back to where we had been originally, see. But we were back another couple of miles and back. So they got out of range, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt safer back there. But it wasn't safe yet, but it was safer anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got up there, they run a shot. I don't know why they did it. But they moved us up right up there with our own artillery. And gee, when the Germans would shell, you could see the shells landing in among the trenches out there out in the fields. You could see the shells landing in there. And of course, it didn't make you feel very good to see a guy's body going up in the air, you know, shells exploding, blowing them up. But that's the way it was anyway. But we hot-footed it back to the a mile or two back further to where we were the night before, see. We went right back to where we were the night before. And that's where George Letts had that supply company lined up there on the edge of the woods.
Right.
So that was as far as we went that day. Now, do you want to jump? A couple of months later, we moved to the Argonne, and that was toward the end then. It was getting toward Armistice Day, and I got a chunk of shrapnel in the leg, and they took me to a field hospital, one of our own field hospitals, and they operated on my leg, and then they took us in these ambulances, bumpy outfits, and they moved us to this railroad or to the ambulance cars, you know, ambulance on the train, you know. And then they took us from there, they took us to Limoges, France, where Uncle Emil and my dad had been too. And that's where I was. That's where we were when Armistice Day came. When our And for us in the hospital, that was, God say, that was a wonderful occasion, because we were all relieved it was over. That is, we thought it was, but it was. And then when the armistice was signed, we looked forward to going home, because it's, we were one of the closest to the seaport, so we'd be one of the first to go. See, and that was why it was easy for us to figure out where we were. But we didn't leave there until almost Christmas, even at that, being that close to Bordeaux. But that's where we sailed from, was Bordeaux. And we sailed on the Aeolus. She had been a German passenger ship, and she had been pretty busy, you know, all the years. And so we boarded her, and we got our shots, got some money. Each one of us took so many dollars, you know, to have some money. And we sailed at the high tide. We sailed from Bordeaux. And then we, for 1 week, we traveled across the Atlantic, and we entered the harbor at what did I say yesterday? It was Norfolk and what's it called? Norfolk and
Newport.
Newport, yeah, Newport and Norfolk. And Cape Henry and Cape Charles, that's the names of those two points. Yeah, Cape Charles and Cape Henry. And we disembarked then. They took us off, carried us off, by the way, too. We were all, you know, ambulatory patients or such a word or something like that. And they took us in these army trucks. They took us to these hospitals around there. And then we were there for 2 or 3, 4 days. Then they put us on hospital trains then going to Camp Custer, where we were headed for, the ones that are around our neighborhood. And that's where I headed. I called my aunt up from Detroit, Aunt Belle. And she called my mother, then told her that I'd called her and that I was safe in the United States. And my mother fainted when she answered the phone, and she was told that. And so mother came down to Camp Custer the next morning, or the next day. And of course, I didn't get out right away. I had to go re-examine and everything. But in 3 or 4 days, I was back home at Bay City. And of course, that was that was quite an event to get home, I'll tell you. They all met me at the depot, at the West Side Depot. My brother Victor was at the depot to meet me, see. And, well, it was quite an event anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went back to school, that's right, too. And it was, see, it was about in January. It was in January, because it was October. At Christmas time, we were on the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And 1 week later, we were in, well, it was around Christmas time, around the middle of the month.
That's right,
January.
You started to finish high school.
Yeah, then I started in high school and took 6 subjects a semester, and I didn't do bad either. I ended 3rd from the top of the class, you know, when I graduated, I ended that. But anyway, that was the end of the, you know, my experiences. You know, the U.S. Army.
Uh-huh. How about the first band you played with? Was that while you were in high school?
Oh, yes. Oh, then I forgot. When I go into high school, I'm playing on my clarinet. Of course, I played clarinet in the Army band, too.
Uh-huh.
And I started playing with the dance bands. And I got a lot of jobs, you know, in those
days. What was the first orchestra you played with?
Oh, well, it wasn't the LaForte, no, it was Roy Girardo's. That was the first one. That's the one I got with the picture, you know, Roy Hawkins. The Roy Girardo's Orchestra was the first one. Yeah, that's, we were playing at the Redondo. That's where we were playing. Then the next year, I started playing with Clyde LaForge and Herb Vaughn, and Clyde and Gurney and the rest of them.
How many pieces were there?
Oh, we had about 12 then. Pearl Raymond was playing bass, and Pearl just died a short time ago. And Clyde, he died quite a few years ago. But anyway, there isn't many of us left. Herb and I are about the only two left. Oh, we had Gene Goldketz. Now there's one coincidence. He was playing with Clyde on drums, with Clyde LaForge. And Ray Grell, he came here from Jackson. And he's playing with Clyde. And he was quite a pusher, what I mean. He was really aggressive. He took over everything when he got a hold of Clyde and the rest of them. So he went and took over the printing, and he printed all our advertising and everything. And he didn't think I could play clarinets, sax. But I bought a clarinet. I forgot. In the meantime, I got a clarinet. Sax, I mean. I got a sax. I got a beautiful one too.
Uh-huh.
Golden G Christmas my mother got me. At who was that star in that Davidson building? No. It was it wasn't that. It was who was the wonderful violinist there? He played in the Congregational Church Orchestra along with E.B. Perry and Walter Perry, or with Harold Perry and the rest of us. Sure, the Dickens was his name. Well, anyway, they were the ones that I bought the sax from. It was in the Davidson building, just north of the bank. No, it wasn't Grinnell's either. It was, anyway, they're both well-known musicians, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this one was a wonderful violinist, too. And
then you started playing sax?
I started playing sax, see. Of course, the fingering was almost the same. It wasn't exactly the same, but it was almost. So I started playing on clarinet, and then I got this wonderful sax.
Uh-huh.
And she was around $300 in those days, even, in gold, though.
Where were most of your engagements? Where did you usually play?
Oh, we played around here, and then we played at Winona Beach. We used to play the summers out there at the Winona Beach Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
And we played the Masonic. Oh, we played at Saginaw at the Consistory Temple, and we played at the Masonic Temple in Saginaw and the Bay City Masonic Temple. We were busy most of the time, I'll tell you.
Private parties too?
Oh, yes. Oh, fraternity dances and all that, yes. Shoot. But it was some experience anyway. Then we gradually branched out. What I mean by that, we finally were playing all over. We played down Detroit, played at the General Motors Auditorium in Detroit, played two or three times in 1 month down there. And we played at the Masonic Temple in Detroit, out on Lake St. Clair, at the University of Michigan, Michigan State College. We played all those dances, you know, those college dances. Yeah, we were pretty popular in those days.
What kind of music did you play?
We played what they liked.
What was that?
Oh, we played the regular dance music.
Regular
foxtrot. Oh, yes, that was all, there was no, we played what they liked. I'll say that for him.
Is that when you knew Angela Renzo?
Oh, no. I knew him later.
Later.
Yeah, I knew Angela later. And, of course, Bert Bromley, he worked in the bank up there with Ange, you know. Or his mother did. So that Ange and Bert, they formed the Toonsters. And they had Paul LaVoy from WJR, he played with them. And there was myself and Ethel Dibble. And who was the drummer? From Saginaw. And the bass horn player was from Petoskey. See, that's right, we're close by there, Harbor Springs. And that's who our orchestra was up there, see.
Uh-huh.
But of course, we played 2 or 3 years up there, you know, summers. Then we traveled down to Cincinnati, and that's where this the daughter of Pullman Car Company. Yeah, she was his daughter. And talk about a home, boy. And she hired us for the whole week, you know. Oh yeah, Mrs. Paul. That was her married name. That was her married name. And she they took the pictures of the wedding party from the Chicago papers. They all had their correspondence there, you know, taking the pictures. And we stayed at the Spalding Hotel. That was the name of the hotel, too. That was a big, tall building. And we had a whole floor on that. They gave us a whole floor. And we ate right there with the guests. Oh, we had a great... And he had a grand piano there at Spalding's floor.
Uh-huh.
That was a replica of the one in the White House.
Wow.
It was the same as a Steinway.
Uh-huh.
Steinway Grand. And it was just like the one in the White House. That's the one that Ange played when he was there.
Uh-huh.
He played on that one. He always could write that he played on the Steinway.
Right. That was before he wrote Sleepy Time Kill?
Oh, yes. That was before then. Later on, then he wrote Sleepy Time Kill. But, we played a lot of places. Boy, oh boy. Yeah, we sure did. Of course, that was after I played with Clyde, see. Clyde would come in before that, and then I'll tell you where I played too. Well, the word, Crystal Lake, was it? Oh, near Alma. It's they draw from Lansing, Alma College, all those colleges there. And it's Crystal Lake, it was Crystal Lake. Beautiful lake. And we played there in that big dance hall there on that shore. And we played for Red Curtis. He hired us.
Uh-huh.
And Red Curtis was from Lansing. He's the one now that went down, out west. See, he came here just to get me to go. See, he wanted me in the worst way.
Uh-huh. He wanted you to go with him?
Yeah, he wanted me to go with him. See.
What was the club you played with?
What?
What club did you play at?
Where?
Out west.
Oh, Fatty Arbuckle's nightclub. Fatty Arbuckle. He got in trouble with that Virginia Rap or something like that. Yeah. He killed her.
Okay.
No, he killed her, though. She died in the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got in wrong.
But then were you working...
I wasn't playing with him then. I wasn't playing.
No.
No, I wasn't.
Were you working in Bay City then? You were sitting in...
No, no, not yet.
You were still in school?
Yeah.
Right?
But, no. No, I wouldn't say that. I forget now how I worked for there. But anyway, wasn't long, and I was working steady for the city.
Uh-huh, right.
And that was steady employment for 30-some years.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, 30-some years. But I was playing nights, too.
I know.
Yes, I played nights and days.
And you gave lessons. Where did you teach?
Oh, at Holy Rosary. I had 30-some kids a week there.
Right.
That's at Holy Rosary.
That you taught woodsmen.
But I had, yes, clarinets and saxes.
Did you teach piano, too?
What? Oh, no. The nuns taught piano. I gave her lessons too, though, on sax and clarinet. Sister Mary John.
Right.
She was in charge of music for the Holy Rosary. Yeah, I gave her saxophone lessons, clarinet lessons.
Uh-huh.
But I tell you, I'm coming all the way from Rose City. There was 2 a week from up at Rose City. You remember the Karchers and the cousin of his? Yeah, there was 2 from up there. I had around 30-40 lessons a week, mm-hmm. daytimes. That's not counting my work for the city.
Right.
So I was keeping pretty busy.
Pretty busy, yeah.
Yes, I was. I was keeping pretty busy.
Well, what was the band that's called the Little German Band?
Oh, that was there's a dozen German bands, but the first German band around here was the American Legion German Band.
Oh.
That's Bill Mertens and the rest of us.
Same ones that were in the
Clyde played with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he played drums. But Bill Mertens played trombone, and who's some of the others that played in that? Oh, Adi Mao played. Adi Mao played in that when they first started. And Jack Curley played trumpet. Those were some that I can remember. But we've got in on all the Legion doings, you know what I mean, when they had any doings, right? We got in on it, you know. See, like they have a banquet out to Greece or Carol or someplace, we got in on that too. So we kept moving, I'll tell you. Yeah, we kept moving. See, sometimes we come home and be a blizzard, be blowing outside. We'd have to walk maybe the last 3 miles into Bay City. Earl Cook and the rest of us.
Yeah.
We'd have to walk. Sure, there'd be various instruments and everything out there. Snowplows couldn't even get through. Yep, the snowplows couldn't get through. I used to come home. Do you remember I used to come home here for breakfast? I'd just get here in time to eat for breakfast.
And you had to go to work?
Yes. Yes. Well, I tell you, it was kind of rugged, but it was good money too, so that's the part that I was interested in the money part. But I played it more of orchestra than that, but we played it, now the Forces Orchestra, we played it at Winona Beach, outside of the big hall. I mean, the big hall, before they tore it down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we played out there every summer. We played there for a few summers right there. And we played for all the private parties around Bay City. We played in the Redoubt.
Where were some of the private parties you played?
Oh, well, we played a lot of them, my gosh. Well, like in Saginaw, we played at the auditorium. But at Saginaw, we played at the... Oh, there's different clubs, you know what I mean? Now, they had their dances every week. They'd have it at the Masonic Temple. Then they'd have them here in Bay City at the Masonic Temple. And why? We couldn't track them all over there. Oh, yeah, and in one of the big ones that we counted, there's a dedication of the Dow Chemical Company Country Club over there.
Did you?
Yes, we played for that. Yeah, that wasn't the Forces Orchestra, though. That was Al Lair's Orchestra in Saginaw. Well, I played the auditorium for 4 or 5 years, too. Yeah, but that was one of the big ones we played. It was at Dow's, you know. And the Dow Sun was running the lights, you know. They had lights on to come up through under the glass floor.
Oh.
And the lights had come up through there, you know, you could regulate it and go down and everything like that. Well, his son, one of his sons, would run the lights. He'd be right up there where we were. We were up in a niche up on the side of the wall and playing, and all the big shots were dancing down below.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah, that was one of the big parties we played. Played a lot of big ones.
Well, a lot of the homes on Center Street have those big ballrooms up on the third floor.
Oh, I know. Well, that's in the days, the horse and buggy days.
Oh.
That's why that was.
They didn't have balls anymore when you played.
What?
Did they ever have a ball or a party in those big
ballrooms? Oh, no. They were a thing of the past.
No.
Yeah, they were a thing of the past. Oh, we did play. Yes, I take that back. No. I take that back. We played one. That was one of the Smiths. He bought this place next to Shears, you know, on Park and Center. That one that has a house here. And this second one on this north side, that big one there.
Uh-huh.
He was going to, he's moving away. So he and all the Center Avenue gang were all there. And mixing the highballs, and LaForge Orchestra was playing.
Uh-huh.
And I also played with Jimmy Bennett's concert band here in the parks, the city band.
Mm-hmm.
And we played a series of concerts every summer for quite a few summers here in the city park over across the river.
Uh-huh.
And of course we got paid for that. And then I played with some of the dance jobs too. I played with Jimmy, mm-hmm. You know.
Who were some of the other members of that band?
Oh, that was mostly guys out of the band, you know, the big bands.
Oh.
They weren't dance musicians. They were just, Jimmy would hire them, see.
Uh-huh.
but that's who I played with. That's some of them that I played with. But I also forgot to mention that I used to dabble in radio. I had one of the first radios here in Bay City when I was going to high school. When I came back from the Army, I graduated from Central or from Eastern, and I dabbled in the radio, and I got so I was pretty good at it, and I went and invested in a 100-foot pole and television or a radio antenna and 5-kilowatt transmitter. And when I used to step on the key in the garage, I'd pull all the lights down for blocks around. They'd all dim. And of course, that made them very unhappy. But that's what happened anyway. But I finally had to, the government got after me. Because it's 5 kilowatts, see, I was coming in good down Detroit. Yeah, I was. I was coming in good.
Was that the first one in Bay City?
Yeah, well, I had the first one, yeah.
First radio in Bay City?
And that was it, see. So I had to sell it, but it was one of the first ones. It was one of the first ones. And one of the things that I did during this time was that the service, you know, your wire service. Wires were brought down by the sleet storms, and they couldn't get their news in. So I had to get it in by radio, you know, from Detroit. So they sent out a couple of their star reporters out to the garage up above my mother's, and they wrote it down up there, see. Then they put it in the paper. They even thanked me for the courtesy, you know, letting them do that, see. Yeah, they thought it was pretty nice, so I did get a little credit for that, too.